This is the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan. And we are coming to you on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. It is about 3 in Chicago, and the Cubs have just swept the New York Mets in a 4-game series at Citi Field. And Brendan, I'd like to start today's podcast by reading some song lyrics to you.
This is interesting.
Meet the Mets. Meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kitties. Bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life. Brendan, we did.
I don't think the Mets wanted to have their lyrics come off like that, but it sure does work for us that way.
I had a great time watching this series, and, you know, judging by some of the gifs and reactions and quotes that we saw, it seems like the Cubs really did have the time of their life in this weekend series at Citi Field. But on this show, we will break down those 4 games in New York, the Cubs again winning all 4 of them, and then we will preview this upcoming stretch as the Cubs return to Wrigley Field after an off day on Monday. But let's jump right into these Mets games. On Thursday, the Cubs winning 5-1 behind the arm of Jose Quintana, who goes 6 shutout innings, allowing just 3 hits, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts. The Cubs not doing much against Mets starter Seth Lugo, but eventually they do get to the bullpen. Hansel Robles taking the loss in this one, and it is Ben Zobrist hitting his 4th homer of the year. Kyle Schwarber driving in a run. Jason Hayward, who had a big series in New York, driving in a run. Brandon Nimmo would get the Mets on the board in the 8th, but Wilson Contreras would bring that run right back with a sacrifice fly to put the Cubs at 5, and that was all they would need. Brandon Morrow getting his 13th save in this one. On Friday, the Cubs winning 7-4. It was Tyler Chatwood's wild ride again, the walk total eclipsing the strikeout total. I imagine Brendan will have some thoughts on that for us. But like we've seen with Chatwood throughout the early portion of this season, only surrenders 2 earned runs despite some troubling command. He goes 5 1/3, allowing 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 4 walks, and 3 strikeouts. He does allow a home run to Brandon Nimmo. In this one, Kyle Schwarber ripping a 3-run home run to give the Cubs some much-needed insurance. And it was a Kyle Schwarber, Ben Zobrist, and Chris Bryant rally in the top of the 7th in this one that brings the Cubs back from a 2-1 deficit. And it is Chris Bryant coming through in the clutch to give the Cubs the lead. Again, Schwarber would homer to give the Cubs some much-needed insurance. The Mets would rally a little bit to bring it to 6-4 in the 8th, but Ian Happ would deliver an insurance run in the 9th, and that was all Brandon Morrow would need for his 14th save of the season. Again, 7-4, the final on Friday. In Saturday's game, this was a weird one, Brendan. One of the weirder games I can recall watching. It was Mike Montgomery and Jacob deGrom, the MLB's ERA leader, in a pitcher's duel for the 6 innings that Mike Montgomery was in this game. Both pitchers surrendering a run. Mike going 6 innings, allowing just 2 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. Montgomery was excellent again, continuing to give Joe Maddon something to think about when Yu Darvish does eventually return. And Jacob deGrom was as advertised in this one, 7 innings of 13 strikeout ball, but we couldn't get this one settled in 9 innings. We couldn't get this one settled until the 14th, where the Cubs break through with 6 runs in the 14th inning, going on to win this one 7-1, a very strange final score for a 14-inning game. And the Cubs striking out 24 times in the 14 innings, which I believe is the highest total in Major League Baseball this year.
14 innings, though, you know.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
But they pound out 17 hits, drive 7 across the plate again. And it was Albert Almora Jr. continuing to shine and getting the game-winning hit in this one with a 2-run double. Ben Zobrist followed with a 2-run double for himself. And then, as he's wont to do, Javier Baez comes off the bench and provides the exclamation point with a two-run bomb to left field. Again, the Cubs winning 7-1. The underlying story in this one, though, is Luke Farrell, who we'll talk about a little more, but he pitches 5 innings of relief. Corey Mazzoni and Justin Wilson doing their job, combining for 2 clean innings before that to keep things moving and get us to extras. And then it was Luke Farrell's game. A couple guys in the bullpen, Strope, Dunsing, and Cishek, unavailable. No questions asked. Madden is not going to go to them. So this one was on Luke Farrell for a while. And boy, did he deliver. Luke Farrell, of course, his last 2 outings prior to coming back up to the major leagues with the Cubs ended in Cardinals walk-off homers. So a huge job for him to push through those 5 innings, 7 strikeouts over the course of 5 innings. So him and Montgomery combining for 11 innings of 1-run, 4-hit baseball. Really great stuff from Luke Farrell, and sort of just goes with, we've mentioned a lot of these guys kind of stepping up, Rosario, Hancock, some of these guys just stepping up in big spots and helping the Cubs out when they need it the most. Again, so 7-1, the final on Saturday, and then what did I say, Brendan, when we were doing the preview for the Mets series? I said, give the ball to John to either win the series or sweep the series.
He called it.
And what does he do? John Lester, 7 innings of shutout baseball. He lowers his 2018 ERA to 2.44. He is now 6-2 on the year. He allows just 2 hits. He was no hitting the Mets into the 6th inning. No runs, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts. John Lester is good, is the moral of today's game. And the Cubs getting their runs in, I think, The top of the 7th inning in this one was a microcosm of Chicago Cubs baseball and New York Mets baseball,
and Javi Baez baseball.
Yeah, that's part of Cubs baseball. I think he's part of our brand at this point. But so just to go through what happens in the 7th, since it's the only scoring in this game, as Lester and Steven Matz sort of going pitch for pitch up until that 7th inning there. Wilson Contreras and Javi Baez on 1st and 3rd. First of all, Javi gets to 3rd on an incredible off-the-bat read on a shallow liner that falls in for Wilson Contreras. But Javi, no question in his mind, and he was already at 3rd base by the time any of the outfielders had that ball. So great read by him. That was the start of the Cubs base running success in this inning. Then on 1 pitch, Wilson Contreras fakes the steal of 2nd. Very clearly deliberate and getting in the head of Steven Matz, who on the very next pitch throws over to Wilson Contreras. Unfortunately for Steven Matz, Javier Baez was already running home.
He was already basically home.
Yeah, so Javi Baez, I believe for the 3rd time in his career, 2nd time in a regular season, steals home. When I posted the highlight to CubsInsider.com, I wrote, I think there would be more fanfare over this play if this wasn't literally the 3rd time we've seen Javi do this. It's amazing to have someone make stealing home almost pedestrian for you. That's just kind of the pun intended magic of Javier Baez. And then Wilson Contreras continuing the good base running, and this was sort of the Mets portion of this inning. A shallow pop to right field off the bat of Kyle Schwarber, and Wilson Contreras wisely notices that the second baseman, Guillorme, decides to catch the ball instead of right fielder Jay Bruce. He catches it backpedaling on his back foot. Wilson scampers home, and the throw is not in time. I'm not entirely sure what kind of defense that was, but that's the Mets. And then Ben Zobrist with a sack. It was Ben Zobrist who hit that ball, not Kyle Schwarber. I apologize. So that was it. 2-0. We have Randy Rosario, Steve Cishek, and Brian Dunsing come in after John Lester, as again, Joe Maddon trying to avoid Brandon Morrow today after he does still come in that 14-inning game as he was up when the Cubs went up 3-1, and Joe Maddon does not like to get Brandon Morrow up and not use him. So, out of breath after that one. 4-game series are a little hard to recap.
Yeah, so much detail in this one.
But the only other thing, just because it's funny, I want to read before I turn it over to you, and you can give us your general thoughts on the sweep. Brendan and I both of course, when we record after a podcast like this, we both hold brooms for the entire podcast.
Yeah, of course, in both my hands.
Right. But I just want to read, and it's the reverse, basically, for Tommy and Stella, but I just think it's funny to look at Javier Baez in the scorebook today. So the lineup for the Cubs today, Almora Jr. in center field, Hayward in right field, and here's Javier Baez. Third base, second base, 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 third base, shortstop.
I'm surprised you could even say it that fast. Like, I gave you props just for that.
Yeah, did everybody get all that?
Jeez, was that 12 times?
So with Bryant and Rizzo out today, Javi was basically the field general for the Cubs, and he was going from second to third, switching with Tommy La Stella, depending on the handedness of the batter and where they were anticipating them to be hitting the ball. And then, of course, he takes over for Russell, who leaves the game with a finger contusion. We hope he's okay. I know Brendan is very nervous. He's always nervous, but he's more nervous today about that. But Brendan, anyway, I'm done talking for a minute. Give me a break here. And thoughts on the sweep? Yeah. Your player of the series here in New York.
Go get some water for that 10-minute breakdown, which we needed with all those details. Before I get into that, this podcast is presented by SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually was just using SeatGeek to find potential tickets in Philly, as I'll be out there towards the end of the month, and it's really easy to use. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners, you guys get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code CUBSRELATED today. That's promo code CUBSRELATED for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Corey, my player of the series, I'm going to go with Luke Farrell, man. I think him coming back from AAA after being demoted for blowing two straight games, this is incredible from Farrell's point of view, in my opinion, to have the mental fortitude to face another high leverage potential walk-off situation. He gets out, bases loaded jam, and I think it was the 11th or 12th, gets out of it and gets the win. And on the broadcast today, Len and JD were showing guys who've been in relief, who've had 7-plus strikeouts, and I think the minimum was 5 innings, and the only other pitcher to do that in Major League history was Randy Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you saw that, right?
And that was kind of cheating because, as they were saying, that was a suspended game.
Right, and which basically meant the next day Randy came out as a start, essentially, with 7 innings. But you don't really see that ever for a player, even who's a consistent reliever on the team, do that. For Farrell to come up from Iowa and do that is incredibly, incredibly impressive. So I got to give him my nod. I was thinking about going with Montgomery just because, again, second straight outing. I thought he was even better this outing against the Mets. I think he had a no-hitter too, right, Corey? Am I just combining these phenomenal starts now?
But I believe he did for a little bit.
Right. Well, regardless, he had like 12 straight grounders. That's what it was too. And the one fly ball ended up being a homer. But I think it was a toss-up between Montgomery, toss-up between Farrell. Going to go with Farrell. He deserves it. Very clutch performance. Gives the Cubs bullpen, who needs to rest with Carl Edwards Jr. continuing to get that shoulder healthy. It's a much-needed outing for Farrell, Corey.
Yeah, it was really impressive. And like you said, I mean, I think the key here is just the mental strength to go out and do that. I mean, obviously, he's not necessarily anticipating having to throw five innings like that late at night you know, the Mets offense isn't any good, but that you know, it doesn't really matter here. I think, again, for his last two MLB outings to be walk-off home runs to a division rival, you know, obviously that one on Sunday Night Baseball, I think, really stings. And for him to come back and do this and gut this out for the Cubs, as, you know, I think we know eventually this offense is going to do something. I don't think we all thought it would take 14 innings, but he gave him a chance. He kept him in that game. All the Cubs really needed was just continued chances, right, against that Mets bullpen.
You know, it reminded me of that one Marlins game with Eddie Butler earlier in the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And unfortunately, it did kind of feel like with Butler, Farrell was going to take a really unfortunate loss at certain points in that game. But he gets a much, much deserved win. That is one of those. There's a lot of screwy wins and losses with late inning baseball, you know, undeserved. I think in one of those games, you know, maybe you pick up a win if you blow a save, et cetera, right? This was one where it was like he really deserved this win. So did Montgomery, but Farrell with a great performance in this series as well. My player of the series is 37-year-old Ben Zobrist. There were some good
37
choices
too. I think it was a few
days
ago.
A fresh 37. Look, I could have stuck to my brand, but I think it would have been the third podcast in a row that I picked John Lester.
But it was totally justifiable.
I mean, at this point, it just goes without saying. You know, John is just doing his thing. Like I said, I mean, a 2.4 ERA. Len and JD were talking today. You know, if things continue this way, he's well on his way to another All-Star appearance. You know,
he's already a Cubs legend in our
John
eyes.
Lester doing John Lester things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Ben Zobrist, man, and I know that you and I especially, I think, have always been on the Ben Zobrist train since he signed with the Cubs. And this is the time, Brendan, where those of you that have been listening to us since the beginning of last season, I think we talked about his wrist injury so much that I would be surprised that those of you who have been with us since last season don't remember the exact date, who was pitching, the other team, because we were positive that he just wasn't all of a sudden not a good hitter anymore, and that it was tied to that wrist injury, and that even though the Cubs didn't immediately put him on the DL for it, he eventually expressed that it was painful when he swung from the right side, and the numbers just did not make sense for a guy who had been so consistent throughout his career. And you're seeing it this year that, you know, and we saw it late last year as well, but a healthy Ben Zobrist is a healthy Ben Zobrist, and that was not a healthy Ben Zobrist.
Yeah, I mean, his numbers are basically exactly what they were the previous few years prior to the injury.
Well, they're actually heading to better, but he currently leaves today's game with a .306 batting average and an .860 OPS. Again, 37 years old. But he goes 8 for 15 in this series with a home run, 5 RBIs. He hits the what turns out to be the game-winning home run in Thursday's game, the Cubs only giving up one run in that game, so his two-run homer in the fifth, the game-winning hit. And then he comes up with the clutch hit on Friday to tie the game at 2, again, before Chris Bryant drove him in to give the Cubs the lead. He's the one, you're not really giving him credit for this, but, you know, he hits that shallow fly that scores Contreras today. And then, of course, he has a big double to follow up on Albert Almora's game-winning double in the game, the 14-inning game on Saturday, to give the Cubs some insurance. Javi gave them more, but 5-1 was also very nice, as Ben Zobrist with a two-run double there. So, yeah, man, I mean, he's your leadoff hitter. He's leading off in the majority of these games, and he just looks great. I mean, there's just no two ways about it.
I mean, Zobrist is
back.
Yeah,
I mean, he's just doing his thing. And, you know, I think we went into this year a little unsure just because he did have the wrist thing last year. He's battled back injuries throughout his career.
Even at the start of this year, he had a few hiccups with some back tightness. That kind of scared us.
And just, you know, with so many young guys on this team and just the way that everything is trending, no one really sure what Ben Zobrist's role exactly would be in this year. But when you've got a healthy Ben Zobrist doing what he's been doing for a very long time,
It changes the dynamic of the team.
Yeah, I mean, you look at his numbers right now. He's, again, a .306 batting average, a .373 WOBA, a .136 weighted runs created plus, and his walk rate, Brendan, is 2 percentage points higher than his K rate.
Right.
That's it.
I mean, is there any other player? Hitter.
He's Ben Zobrist. He's going to be in there most days.
Is there any other player you trust more with the game on the line or just a high leverage moment? There's really no one here, Corey.
No. Like, and at Cubs on Twitter has made that joke. I mean, it's funny, too, because it's obviously the joke you make, but they make it so – it's similar to Javi stealing home, right, where you kind of just get, like, desensitized to this stuff. But they've been rolling out the, like, gee, stop us if you've heard this one before. Right. Ben Zobrist with a clutch hit. And I feel like I've seen that tweet 5 times in the last week.
It's like
– he just
– yeah. It's like
he's just so great. It's really impressive for a guy to be so consistent in this league, you know, and especially you think about where the league has changed, you know, since his, what does he debut? I think in 2006,
what, getting a long regular time playing ago, time.
Yeah, starting in like 2007, 2008. The game has changed, pitching has changed, so much has changed, but if there is one constant in Major League Baseball, if it's not that John Lester is really good, it's that Ben Zobrist is really good also.
So who? So in my mind, there was one other player on the Cubs in recent memory that I felt as comfortable at the plate in a really high leverage moment. Can you name that player who I'm thinking of? Might be kind of difficult. I'll give you a hint.
For you, I don't know. You're kind of a weirdo, so it's hard.
There's some things I'm a little weird about. This one's pretty out there. I think most Aramis Cubs fans.
Aramis Ramirez?
Yeah, it's like Aramis, dude, right? Like,
I don't know if that's out there.
No, I think.
I don't know who else it would even be.
No, I think it's a pretty general perception that Aramis was like super clutch back then. Like he was the guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but
I'd
rather have Zobrist up there, though.
Just well, I mean, Aramis never had a game-winning hit in Game 7 of the World Series, so
yeah,
I think
that's true.
I think that's an easy argument to
make
here, Corey.
That's probably true. He did hit that grand slam off the pole in Miami, though, which
true. We all forget about that. The Cubs did not win the World Series that year, though.
No, they didn't.
No.
But we can all watch that and laugh now, because they did in 2016.
Yeah, and so hold on. Zobrist's WAR this year is 1.8. Bryce Harper's WAR is 1.5. So I guess you can kind of make the argument that we don't need Bryce Harper next year, right? Here, right, Corey?
Well, I was going to say, or the other conclusion is that Ben Zobrist is also going to sign like a $400 million contract.
Right, yeah.
So, until he's 47, 10 years, $400 million.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know. I mean, I think Ben Zobrist, I don't know if he has any desires on this, but he could probably pull like a Julio Franco and just play till he's like 50, right? I mean, I don't see any reason why not.
Would you sign Zobrist again if he has another year like this next year? I'm serious about that. Like, next year's his last year, right? He'll
be 38. It's an interesting
sort of
choice.
It's like the Chase Utley thing that the Dodgers have. Like, they know, like, he's declining. He's not the same Chase Utley from 5 years ago, but they just bring him back anyway despite the bad numbers.
Yeah, and I mean, there's just something to having him on the team and, you know, his presence. I think you can really tell how valuable his veteran presence and just mindset is to some of these guys. But yeah, I think, you know, it kind of reminds you of David Ross. Like, David Ross decided to retire, but I think even now most of us are like, you know, I'm kind of glad he still lingers around every now and again. It's not a lot now that he's doing TV stuff, but I don't think anybody's upset to see him working with the guys in spring training and, you know, knowing that he has a line of contact to these guys. So
absolutely.
I mean, Zobrist is just one of those guys you just want in your organization. You just want him around your players, your young players. You just can't say enough about the guy. I mean, it's just so impressive, his consistency. And again, like, age doesn't necessarily matter always, right? Different guys.
There's a few guys that are out. I mean, these guys are outliers. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, different guys have different trajectories through their careers. But I think you'd be remiss to not point out that the dude is 37 years old and having, you know, one of his
career
better seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the numbers. I mean, this right now would be one of the best seasons of his career. So,
well, we were saying that, too. Like, heading into the year, we figured Javi would get much more playing time because Madden basically said, like, yeah, he's going to get 600 plate appearances. But with that said, there's a lot of ideas that if that was the case, Zobrist would be basically not demoted, but given a little bit more less meaningful role. And it's been the complete opposite. Like, Zobrist if he's not in there batting leadoff or the top of the lineup, like, it feels a little empty at some points. So it's this, and we were talking about it too in the start of the year, like, for an ideal leadoff guy, quote unquote, you know, guy gets on base, works with that bats, Zobrist is the dude to do it. And we're seeing him being healthy. We're seeing the good at bats. The walk to strikeout ratio, like you mentioned, is one of the best in Major League Baseball. This is what happens when Ben Zobrist is healthy.
Yeah.
But Corey, I want to read my quotes of the series.
Hit me with it.
I think we're sharing the same quotes. Are we sharing the same quote?
They're similar, but not the same quote. Okay. No.
All right. My quote's a little bit unorthodox. So Joe Maddon was mic'd up in that Saturday game on Fox, and it was in extra innings, and Rizzo is right next to Maddon. And Maddon turns to Rizzo, and he goes, "Hit a home run, you get to pitch." Rizzo kind of smiles, and he goes, "Tonight?" And Maddon goes, "Yeah, you do, yeah." And Rizzo goes, "All right," and just walks away, kind of like with one of those big smirks on his face. And it kind of points, the reason I bring that up is because it shows, as an example, how these players interact with their manager, how they respect Joe Maddon, and the kind of feel around the clubhouse right now that even in a stressful tie extra inning game, they can still have fun. And there were several other examples this series of the Cubs dugout exploding in jubilance when, for example, when Javi stole home. Like Rizzo, it reminded me of Rizzo's expression when Arrieta hit the home run in game 3 of the NLDS in 2016 in San Fran. Like Rizzo was going nuts in that dugout, like hugging Brandon Hyde. It's good to see. And it kind of reminded me of the same type of feel that we saw or that we felt with that 2016 team. Like, yeah, we're going to win. We're going to have fun doing it. We're going to do it our own individualized way. And this is how we're going to go about our business here, Corey.
Well, yeah, I mean, that little video, it was on. I think I either quote tweeted it or retweeted it from the at Real Cubs Insider account if you want to see it. But it was an at MLB, like their official account video. But that was such an incredible video. It's so short, but just that interaction is just so beautiful. I just don't...
Like, imagine Mike Matheny having that reaction. I would drop dead if he did that.
But just Rizzo's... The look on Rizzo's face and the way he said, tonight. Like, tonight. If I do it right now, you're going to put me on the mound. I don't know. There's just little moments like that that remind you of why you love these players and love this team. And I'll follow that up. It's the same game. But this is a quote from The Athletic, Sadhav Sharma. And he says, Almora said they were having fun in the dugout. Team gave him hell when he tried and failed to break bat over his knee, which in today's game he pantomimed and then smiled at the dugout, which is just great. I mean, these guys are just... having a lot of fun.
No fear.
Right. And then he goes on to say, when Javi hit the home run, Almora said they joked with Maddon, quote, "You took that long to put him in. If he was just going to do that, we would have been out of here a long time ago." So these guys are having fun. I know that, you know, throughout parts of this season, it's been inconsistent and frustrating. And I think we're at, two rant podcasts already early in the year. Vent podcast, whatever you want to, maybe one and a half.
Well, we had the Cardinals extra inning one.
Yeah,
so one that was for sure.
You know, I think moments like that and instances like that are just a reminder that this team, when Joe preaches, you know, patience and trusting the process, etc. You know, this is part of it. Like, they're just out there trying to succeed and do the little things every day. And I know that for fans, and certainly us, right, everybody in the media, etc., we get bogged down in every result and every little action and loss and everything.
Decision,
right?
Everything.
But this team is just taking it day by day, doing their thing. They're trusting each other, trusting the talent, and trusting the process. And, you know, I think you and I say all the time, it gets old to hear when things aren't going well, but there really is a reason, and you all know this, that we say talent is going to win out over the course of 162 games. And this group and what they've done and the success that we've seen over a sustained period of years here now is not a mistake. It's not a coincidence. It's not luck. And it's ugly at times, right? But The majority of it is not. And this was...
I mean, it's like you just blink and they're already 10 games above 500. Yeah,
and this like, how did week that happen? Was fantastic. And it's funny to look at this week because I believe this is exactly the road trip that is part of that disaster period in 2016, a three-game set on the road.
It's the exact road trip.
At Pittsburgh and four games in New York. And it was a total disaster in 2016, like easily the worst stretch of baseball I think that we've seen since this, you know, this like renaissance in 2015 started.
Yeah.
And they kill it. You know, they win six of the seven games here. They sweep a really ugly-looking New York team. Apologies. I have some Mets friends out there. That is rough. I mean, that is just some rough baseball being played at Citi Field. And as I mentioned in the preview last time, I think that little fire at Citi Field was, you know, pretty emblematic of what's going on there. But that's what you got to do. Metaphor. And, you know, again, I know, like, there's a few of these games here where it might have even been all of them. Because, like, Zobrist hits that one home run in the fifth. Like, the Cubs didn't score before, I think, like, the sixth inning in any of these games. I'm looking at these box scores right now. The fifth.
Yeah, two runs in the fifth on Thursday. In the first four innings.
And, sure, that's frustrating, but eventually they pound it out. And, you know, I know that's not exactly how you draw it up, and, you know, certainly to be in a bunch of nothing-nothing or, you know, one-to-nothing games with the Mets for a few innings there, you're like, okay, this isn't great. But they get the job done. They win the four games, and they're actually right now, to give you a little live look in here, getting a little help, hopefully, from their, I'm doing air quotes, friends on the south side, who have jumped out to a 4-1 lead on the Brewers. The Brewers led 1-0 in that game. So we're in the bottom of the seventh in Chicago, again, about 3:30 in Chicago as we're recording this. So, yeah, if the Brewers cannot come back in that one, that would be really nice. And the Cubs would be two games back and equal with the Brewers in the loss column. So, you know, again, all those rainouts for the Cubs kind of somewhat of an advantage here is the Cubs can go out and win those games and make that up. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Brendan, I mean, this was just a great road trip. And I think to punctuate it with this series, and like both of our quotes of this series were about how they're having fun again. And, you know, I know that they probably never stop, but you also read to me a quote from Mark Gonzalez from the Tribune after the game on Saturday, where he just said that there's a lot of yelling and music and jubilance coming out of this Cubs locker room right now. And, you know, you're starting to, I think, feel this team kicking into gear. And again, as we mentioned the last time, I still don't think that they're playing their best baseball right now.
Yeah, yeah. The best is yet to come, which is a good sign, too. That's the thing. And I guess games like this today, too, when you see kind of the total complexion of this team, the base running, the defense, the quality starting pitch when it's there, this is what I mean, where it's kind of like it's a nice almost reminder of what this team was doing in 2016, just because you have the attitude. And that seventh inning where Baez steals home and they stole three bases that inning. Schwarber stole a base. Willie stole another base. So that's what I'm talking about. When all things are clicking, then, you know, like the Brewers are playing well and everything, but at some point, like, the talent does tend to win. Most of the time. Baseball is a wacky sport and you get unfortunate. But most of the time, it does. But that kind of leads me to my trend of the series. And I have bonus quotes here, Corey. We didn't talk about this, but there's several bonus quotes I want to bring up because it brings me right into this trend of the series. But it is the starting pitching. And we talked about Montgomery having another start. Lester continues to be just exceptional. He's John Lester. Quintana had a nice rebound performance, I thought, six innings strong, some good strikeouts, better command. I thought he looked better. And then Tyler Chatwood, he continues to be an enigma, but I would be remiss if I didn't bring this up too. When the Cubs had all their socks up in support of Tyler Chatwood, that embodies this culture. And again, you know, there's this dichotomy in sports, in baseball, with, you know, stat people and the human nature, team chemistry side of things. So that it clashes. In my view, it goes hand in hand. Like, this is, to get the best out of your players, you need to have people who encourage you, a good nurturing environment. And this is a good example of why the Cubs are a little bit different, in my opinion, than most other baseball franchises. That was good to see. But speaking about Chatwood, so I thought he looked better. The walks came, those two walks were basically back-to-back and then back-to-back again. So there are four walks, not good. Still needs to sharpen that up. But take away those back-to-back walks twice, I thought he looked better at times. And so I want to bring up a few quotes from Joe Maddon and from Chatwood as well. Maybe it brings more perspective into what's going on with him and his work. So Maddon said, prior to the outing where Chatwood took the mound, quote, he's been working really hard with Hick. They sound pretty optimistic. I'm a big Chatwood fan. Once he gets in gear, he's going to take off. And so about that work with Jim Hickey, Chatwood also said, quote, I was just getting my hand out of my glove earlier. I felt like I shortened my stride and was able to stay on top of the ball. So, you know, we saw a little bit of that. If you were to compare some of the pitches from last start to previous starts, he was doing that. And I think at times the command was sharp, but it's a work in progress. But with Montgomery, and I'll throw it to you soon here, Corey, but with Montgomery playing so well, Maddon was asked about a six-man rotation. And Maddon said, quote, with everybody healthy, a six-man rotation is probably not going to happen. There's always ways if you want to give somebody a rest to insert a sixth starter, though. So I don't know how you interpret that. I think we're going to see more of Montgomery, even when Darvish does come back as the season progresses, just to give people, like Maddon says, some time off. And we saw that the past few years, especially in that 2016 year where we did go with like a six-man rotation. So I will say, though, if Montgomery continues to pitch this well and Chatwood continues to have to work on things, I don't really see it possible for Joe to justify not starting Montgomery. At the same time, I think we're a few starts away from having to make that decision.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting spot, and I think especially with I think Joe said also that he really has not seen or heard much on Darvish, that they're still sort of just waiting for that to...
Which I don't know what to make of that. That gives me a little bit of anxiety.
Everything gives you anxiety. Addison Russell also saying that he feels like his thing is a couple day thing, not a big deal.
Is that what he said?
Across Twitter.
Did he get x-rays? Is there any x-rays?
I think it was a Jesse Rogers tweet that said, Addison says 1 to 3 day thing, not a big deal. So that's what I got.
Okay, good news.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think if Montgomery keeps pitching like this, I mean, they're going to have a very interesting situation on their hands. I know that you know, Joe says he doesn't necessarily want to do the six-man thing, but if Montgomery's going out there and giving you six, seven innings of, you know, shutout, one run, no walk, you know, or one walk baseball, I have... a tough time sending him back to the bullpen. But, you know, they do want to work through what they're working through with Chatwood and try to get better results there. So, I don't know. I think we've for sure got another turn of this in the rotation. So, I think probably best to just see how it plays out. And, you know, Joe isn't necessarily one to always tip his hand as to what he's thinking and what he wants to do. So, I think I'm going to let it play out and not really worry about it for the moment. But yeah, I would be, I mean, look, Mike Montgomery has asked for this opportunity. He has gotten this opportunity. He has done exactly what you would ask him to do. So what the front office,
and I love his mentality.
Yeah.
Too.
What the front office like and Joe decide to do about that, I'm not sure yet. And I think again, will depend on what Yu Darvish's deal is and both of, you know, Montgomery and Chatwood as they continue to get opportunities here just to see what's going on there. But it's been really important for this team for Mike Montgomery to do this job, and whether he's in the rotation or not, that's not going to be lost on anybody. And like I said, I think he's done everything that he could possibly do to earn more opportunities, whether that's in spot starts going forward, a six-man rotation,
What's your preference, though, Corey? Would you want a six man? I mean,
I don't
pretty
mind it. I have no issue with it. As we're watching the bullpen, you know, be run into the ground to a certain degree.
Today was what, Cizek's 28th outing.
I don't have a problem with it. I think that we've seen the benefits of these guys getting extra rest. I think that the six man, you tend to not like the idea. If you really had, you know, like Lester and Hendricks are really on their game right now, have been for, you know, pretty consistently throughout the year, despite a couple hiccups for each of them. But they're going the way you'd like to see them going. I think if you had Quintana and Darvish also doing the same thing, I understand the not necessarily loving the six-man rotation. Kind of like, let's get our horses out there and let them do their thing while everything's rolling. But we haven't really seen that, though Quintana, again, a good start in this series, and I think continuing to trend in the right direction there. But I think right now, again, with the overall arm usage what it is, though for the starters it's not much because through the early portion of the season they weren't pitching out of the fifth inning. But, yeah, I don't know. I understand where they're coming from in not necessarily wanting to cut bait with Chatwood just yet. Or, you know, move into the bullpen or try a different role with him is what I meant by cut bait. They're not going to, like, get rid of him.
Right.
But, yeah, it's an interesting thing. I think it's just one of those we've seen these issues come up with the position players before, and I think you're sort of seeing exactly that same kind of thing with the rotation. Because as we mentioned before, Mike Montgomery is someone that the Cubs continue to have under contract for another few years. He's cheap.
Three more seasons.
And, yeah, it's not the worst thing in the world to – get him converted to a starter that is giving you quality starts each time he goes out there. So I think it's just one of those things that the way everything is playing out, it's going to force Joe's hand to make a decision. Sometimes those decisions are a little uncomfortable or you're a little unsure in exactly what you should do. But this is one of those things I think that we've discussed throughout the years that is just one of those first world problems for the Cubs. And it's a decent situation to be in where, you know, you have your sixth starter, if you will, in Montgomery right now, you know, counting Darvish in the fold once he's able to come back, making it tough on you as to who you want to throw out there every day. It's a tough situation and a tough choice for Madden and Hickey, as you obviously want to get the right results and you want to be mindful of the mental state and the happiness level of everybody on the team. I think in particular Mike Montgomery in this situation. But it's a good problem to have, you know.
And I think with Montgomery, like, maybe this is not actually truly the case, but he just looks more comfortable as a starter than he does as a reliever. And I know some guys, they need that routine. They need that mental routine and that preparation physically before taking a mound. And I don't know, maybe for Montgomery, like, the starting routine permits that to actually happen. I don't know, but, like, reading some of these numbers from his start against the Mets, like, this is insane stuff here. His sinker averaged almost 94 miles per hour. Like, he doesn't do that out of the pen. Maybe it was just a one-game thing or whatever, but that's still crazy. And then he's able – this is what I was saying before. He's able to, like, set up hitters because he's going to see them again a second time through with all these good secondary pitches. He threw 17 changeups. He threw 16 curveballs. And he threw 35 sinkers, and he shows a cutter every now and then. Like, this is the stuff for a starting pitcher. So I don't know if his type of stuff is necessarily even meant for the bullpen, despite a lot of people preferring him in that situation. He's always been a curious pitcher for me, and I think I made this comment too. Like, the Cubs spent $39 million to get Chatwood, which made complete sense. I still like the deal, and I'm confident that Chatwood can eventually turn into a decent pitcher. But it goes to show you, the reason I bring that up is pitchers like Montgomery are valuable commodities. Yeah. Like, $39 million for 3 years, $13 million a year for Chatwood. Montgomery, like, probably would get something similar on the open market if he were a free agent. Fortunately, he's not. He's under team control for 3.5 more years. And I think the Cubs are, it would be kind of a shame, I think, to not see Montgomery eventually turn into a starting pitcher just because he has so much talent. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think that's a trade too, Montgomery for Dan Vogelbach, that as
phenomenal
everyone
trade.
Is and I don't blame them, but, you know, we frequently look at the Gleyber Torres trade, the Eloy Jimenez trade, et cetera, right?
Of course,
I don't, you know, I understand why people do that. But this is a trade that I think goes overlooked by a lot of Cubs fans. Like this, you know, Vogelbach did not really have a place here and has struggled to stay at the major league level with the Mariners. And Mike Montgomery has obviously been very valuable for the Cubs throughout his time here. In addition to his very solid, you know, lengthy relief throughout 2017, his job here in 2018, you may remember, Brendan, that he was on the mound when the Cubs won the World Series in 2016.
Yeah, people forget that. They did win the World Series that year, yes, correct.
Was the one pitching when that happened. So
he was, yep. When they won the World Series,
yeah. People forget that. I want to read one more. It's sort of a bonus quote, a little bit of a bonus quote, but and then
there's so many good ones from the series. You
yeah,
know?
Right. A lot of quotes today. The Cubs are happy. They're talking. We're talking. You know, it's just what happens. It's a good weekend in New York City. But on the Baez steal of home, just to we talk about and everybody talks about Javi Baez's instincts and his baseball IQ and sort of just how. He gets the nickname El Mago, which I believe he might have given himself, but that's fine because it's very accurate and there's a reason for it. In addition to his defense, his amazing plays and athleticism, he's so smart on the baseball field. And this Jesse Rogers tweeting out that Baez said he signaled to Contreras when they were on first and third, Contreras then baiting Mats to get that throw over on the pitch prior, and Javi said that he would have just gone back to third had Mats, you know, not thrown to first or looked back over there. And so Baez then goes on to say, quote, first move to the plate, he can't see me. I was just seeing how high he was going with the leg. If he goes to the plate, I would just come back to third base. He took his time to go to first. I went for it. He's just always trying to steal runs. It's the same as when he's on defense. He's always trying to steal outs for this team. It reminds you of that double play against the Dodgers where he lets the ball drop and then turns that quick double play. He's always thinking out there.
Were we at that game?
Maybe.
I think you and I were both at that game.
Maybe.
Game two,
well,
right?
I was at that game for sure. I don't remember if
I was at
we
that
went
game
together.
With you. I know I'm a very memorable person to go watch a game with.
But man, I mean, and I, you know, I know that like they're major league baseball players and you don't want to like start freaking out over them doing little things, but he just does them so much. Again, this is the third time he's stolen home. It's amazing to even say that. It's all because he's always thinking, he's always paying attention to how he can steal something from the other team. And when they're not paying attention or when they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Some of these guys on this Cubs team, Baez especially, just always trying to go that extra step. But the only other thing, because I think we kind of had a joint trend in terms of the starting pitching, is that continues to grow more consistent. Very important, and obviously with how much we talked about that at the beginning of the year and not getting length, et cetera, you're really starting to see that trend the other direction. As we mentioned, I think coming into this podcast, you're really seeing this team, I think, round into form. But the one thing
that we
continue to have to mention here, Jason Hayward continues to hit. He had another good series in New York. A couple of offers sandwiched between a two-hit game and a four-hit game. But he continues to put up the numbers, and Joe rewarding him by putting him in the two-hole against righties, I don't mind it. You know, Jason Hayward, when they signed him, was always, I think, a guy you envisioned. It's funny to see this weekend in 2018 with Zobrist and Hayward at the top of the order, because that's what you were sort of booking when you signed them going into that 2016 season. I think that's what the front office and probably Joe Maddon always envisioned for this lineup, is those two.
And then Dexter Fowler came back kind of unexpectedly there. Yeah, that's probably what they wanted to do.
Yes. I don't have an issue with it. When he's hot, ride it. We saw Joe do that, you know, with Almora and Baez. He continues to do that, get those guys up at the top of the order. And Hayward, you know, look, you still see today similar issues as we've seen in the past, a lot of grounders, you know, some weak hit balls, though that was against a lefty. But he's always a guy that is going to put together a good plate appearance. He's going to see some pitches. He'll foul some pitches off. Not a guy who usually you're going to see him go up there and you know, swing wildly and strike out on three pitches, et cetera. And when he's getting results and going the other way and hitting balls on the line, he almost hit a homer in that 14-inning game. Right? That was the 14-inning game, right? Yeah.
They're all meshing together at this point.
That Conforto almost catches, but it was very nearly, you know, another one of those kind of classic left-center home runs opposite field for Jason Hayward. And just worth mentioning, you know, that he's been doing his thing here. And we saw some weird defense from him early in the year, some really uncharacteristic mistakes, losing some balls in the sun.
He almost made a mistake today, though. Did you see that one? Like, there was a foul ball down the right field line. He just kind of gave up on it, almost came back in.
Yeah, but that's
I mean, it's besides the point. I was just on my head. Yeah.
I was just going to say that, you know, that seems to have been cleaned up. We're kind of back to, you know, he threw out a runner at the plate recently, and, you know, we just sort of seem back to classic Jason Hayward doing his thing in right field. But, yeah, just worth mentioning that this team, you know, really rounding into form, and really the only person not going right now seems to be Chris Bryant, and we know that that's only going to be a temporary thing. And, you know, I say that he's not going right now. He, you know, comes out of Saturday's game still with a 912 OPS, and he's been struggling.
Know,
he's 1-for-8 in that game on Saturday. He's been struggling a bit for Chris Bryant, but his number's still very good, and he will get it on track soon enough. And when he does, look out. Because, you know, now you've got Rizzo getting himself back up, hitting about 245, 760 OPS.
Yeah, 245 on the nose, yeah.
Yeah, I think this team is rounding into form, really. The only thing, you know, we'll hope that that Russell thing is only a couple days, as he says. And, you know, just working to get Yu Darvish healthy and back.
I want to hear more about you. I don't like hearing nothing about that.
You'd be nervous if we were hearing a lot, so it's hard to say.
I mean, just give me some update, you know? Like, I can see one of those injuries just kind of turning into 2 weeks and 3 weeks, and before you know it, it's like a month and a half, we don't see Yu Darvish. It kind of scares me. But let me preview this upcoming series. So we have the Philadelphia Phillies.
The fighting Gabe Kaplers.
Yes, the fighting Gabe Kaplers. And we will not see Jake Arrieta this series, by the way.
Today.
So throwing that out there now. But I'm sure the Cubs will do something to honor him, right? Like, you know,
yes,
he'll come out,
absolutely,
tip his cap, some type of video. It's going to happen. But they have Monday off tomorrow or today, depending on when you're listening to this. And then the Tuesday game is a night game, 7:05 p.m. Central start time. We have Zach Eflin on the mound for the Phillies, 1-2, 4.5 ERA. Kyle Hendricks, 4-4, 3.19 ERA. Continues to look sharp, Kyle Hendricks. And then on Wednesday, another night contest, 7:05 p.m. start time. Again, Aaron Nola will be in the mound for the Phillies. Jose Quintana for the Cubs. Nola 7-2 here, Corey. A very good start for him. 2.1 ERA. In my opinion, he's one of my favorite pitchers just to watch. Unfortunately, we'll have to see it against the Cubs. But wicked curveball. Look for the curveball. Has a ton of bite on it. It might give guys like Javi trouble. Mikey guys like Amora trouble. I'll be surprised even if those two start atop the order. We'll see. Quintana has looked better. Hopefully he can continue to be sharp with his command. He starts the game off like blazing, throwing 93-94 recently, and then he kind of dwindles a little bit. So I want to see a little bit more deep starts for Quintana. And then on Thursday, Tyler Chatwood for the Cubs, 3-4, 4.02 ERA. We have Pivetta, I believe is how you pronounce his name, for the Phillies, 4-4, 3.48 ERA. That's a day game, a start time of 1:20 p.m. Chicago time. And then the Cubs, just to give you a little brief rundown where they are in their schedule, this will be a pretty good homestand for them. The Pirates come into town the following weekend, and they go to Milwaukee for an important set. So they're going to be around the area for the next week and a half, 2 weeks, which will be nice for them to get, you know, settled in and get off this road trip. As far as things I'm looking for, I think my biggest pressing issue, or whatever you want to call it, is probably Quintana. I want to see him just settle in, give him a few more starts of just consistent pitching, and then you can team him up with Hendricks and Lester. Yep. and you get that comfort that we're all accustomed to seeing for the pitching corps.
Yeah, I mean, you get the three of them going, you're feeling really
great.
Lights
out.
Yeah, and then obviously, you know, Yu was pitching well before he went, back on the DL here. And but if you can get those three going before that, you're feeling phenomenal about this group. But
yeah,
I'm feeling it, Brendan. We've been waiting, I think, for a stretch like this.
This is it.
The whole year, and I think...
Even last year, to a degree.
Yeah, but, I really think that you and I are feeling it. The vibe is good in, you know, Cub fandom, and this just feels like the start of that big, consistent stretch for this team. The Brewers now trailing 6-1 in the bottom of the eighth here. Again, almost 4 o'clock in Chicago, just to timestamp that for you. But hopefully the White Sox can lock that down, which, again, would put the Cubs 2 games back, tied in the loss column, and a tough stretch here for the Brewers. They're going to have an off day on Monday as well. They have to go to Cleveland to play 2 with the Indians and then go and play these same aforementioned Phillies in Philadelphia for 3 before coming to Miller Park to meet the Cubs on June 11th. Brendan, Cubs are in first place by the time we get to Miller Park.
Book bold. It. Let's
call it. Let's put it here. And if not, they're certainly taking it in that series.
Watch them sweep them again.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. Is the Brewers' record would be a lot better if they didn't have to face the Cubs. So you hope that the Cubs can continue on that. But
Quintana, complete game shutout.
Yeah, this just feels like the stretch.
Again.
And I think that you kind of summed it up. I think, you know, really this team is going well right now. There's a couple things, you know, guys like Quintana that you really want to see get dialed in. You want to see Chris Bryan turn things around after, you know, kind of a rough stretch here. But in general, this team's playing well. Again, it hasn't been perfect. There's been some, you know, not so pretty moments here. Some guys left on base. You know, we're still seeing stuff like that. But, you know, you do get to a point when things are going well enough that you kind of look at that stuff as a good thing. You can shut this team out for 5 innings. You can shut them out for 13 innings, right? But eventually they're still going to put up 7 runs. And they're going to bang out a lot of hits. They're going to take their walks. And I think you're going to see those frustrating losses where they don't come through in the end. I think you're going to see that happen less and less frequently, as we have in years like 2016 or 2017. I think this team is on a roll right now. They're feeling good. And, you know, we already knew that the talent and everything was there. So it's...
Can I read one more stat here before we sign off?
Yes, but I'm
going to
read one more bonus quote.
Wow, we have so
one more
bonus.
This is
a jam-packed show. Okay, so I'm gonna read my last stat and I'll throw it to you. But the Cubs, we saw on yesterday's broadcast, but they're basically number one in like almost every offensive category. But they are the best team in the National League offensively with a 112 WRC plus, a team average, Corey, WOBA of 338. That's basically identical to the Boston Red Sox. It's better than the Houston Astros with a 325 WOBA and a 107 WRC plus. And let me remind you, too, the Astros, the Red Sox, they have a DH. Yankees have a DH, too, obviously. So the Cubs are doing this basically with one less, I guess, power bat in the lineup. So this is it's very reminiscent of last year, and I'm looking at this, too. I remember doing this for the website back then, but like the Cubs are number one in BSR, their base running statistics stat. And they're right up there again in the defensive category. They lead the league in defensive score in Fangraphs at 30.2. So they're number one in base running. They're number one in WRC+. They're number one in defense. That is basically the same thing that we saw in 2016, Corey.
Mm-mm-mm. Brendan.
Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff, I got to tell you.
Very good stuff.
This was a very fun series in New York, a very successful week of baseball. And before signing off, I will end it with words from the skipper, Joe Maddon, on the 6-1 trip. Quote, absolutely, it's the best week of the year for us.
Mm-hmm.
This has been the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. You can find us on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, etc., the usual suspects of podcast apps. If we are not where you prefer to listen, let us know, and we will try to fix that. We appreciate when you give us a 5-star review and comment on whatever service that is, if they offer a rating system. And other than that, we will talk to you after the Cubs and Phillies get things going at Wrigley Field. Until then, thanks for listening, and go Cubs.